take you through a rather fast-paced seminar today. And then at the end, as Bonnie said, I will stay online as long as it takes to answer all your questions. So let's go ahead and get started. Again, I am Kelly Schwartz, owner and CEO of Schwartz Consulting Group. I'm a practice management consultant. I've been working for over 15 years, worked hands-on with almost 400 practices in over 24 states. Last year, my average office increased $172,000 in production and collection by simply introducing some proven management and marketing techniques. What makes me a little different is that I do customized in-office training. And today, what I'm going to do is take you through what I find helps most practices grow to the next level. So we'll go ahead and get started with today's presentation. Please bear with me a little bit. I do have a slight cough, and it's a little irritating to me, and I'm sure it will be to you, but I apologize. Today's topic is about practicing in turbulent times. If you're reading the headlines, there's a lot of changes going on. Unemployment is reaching 10%, over 10% in over 15 states. USA Today is quoting that today's economy echoes the Great Depression. And so things are changing faster than ever before. In looking at that, you're looking at a lot of patients, I'm sure, as you're calling for recall and reminder appointments, that people are saying they've lost their jobs or lost their benefits. And as you can see from this slide, layoffs are higher than they've ever been going back to 1995. Just to give you an idea how times are getting tough, here was a sign on a roadside here where someone was actually selling their teeth for $100. I kind of found that kind of amusing. We're talking today about some things that you can change that perhaps can make your practice better. The first question you have to ask yourself as an office is, why change? Well, there's a saying that things that don't change stay the same, and things that stay the same can become obsolete. If you look at, 20, 30, 40 years ago, the record player, the telephone, and how much times have changed. I have a 14-year-old daughter. The other day I said, "Kylie, you sound like a broken record." She said, "A what?" And technology today in dentistry is happening. Positive changes are occurring, and we have to change with those times in order to be productive and be relevant. It really takes bringing your A game. 15 years ago, 5 years ago, even 2 years ago, you could kind of show up with the stock market the way it was performing. You could show up, pretty much do anything. Your practice was flooded with new patients, and patients were saying yes to the dentistry. Today, that's really made a turn. Without having proper systems, without having proper systems in place, without having
it's my room in the closet. You know the two drawers where Daddy put his clothes? Go and put those in.
Bonnie, someone's coming in pretty loud there. Without bringing your A game and really putting things into place, improving your systems, it's much more challenging. Today, we're really talking about competing on service. This little comic kind of illustrates that. The front desk not being friendly or someone not being courteous. This one was perfect. Someone calling themselves a customer says they want something called service. Today, you can't compete on price, even quality of dentistry, because the average patient doesn't know the difference between good dentistry and bad. But what they really do know is how well do you and your staff treat the patients. Again, just an interesting, fun little thing. We waited 30 minutes and no service. Today, I want to talk about getting back to the basics in customer service and in systems. So one of the first things I like to do with a practice is do what I call defining success. And if you take a look at professionals that are successful, the Bill Gates, the Donald Trumps, the Oprah Winfreys, what is it that makes these people what most people would define successful? Well, what I find is that, number one, they enjoy what they're doing. If you take somebody like Bill Gates, who's a billionaire a few times over, why is he still working today? Well, all of these successful people that I know or that are familiar with, when you look at the common denominators, one, they enjoy what they're doing. Second, they enjoy helping others. And by doing that, they've become successful. And in America, money is not success, but it is how we keep score. And so in looking at the practices today and the difference between successful practices and average practices really come down to the attitude of the doctors and the staff. When I meet a doctor and the staff, I'm really looking at, are they having fun? Do they really enjoy being there? And if you don't enjoy being there, your patients aren't going to enjoy coming to see you. The other is this doctor and staff have to really have the passion for seeking and finding ways to help patients. It could be helping them understand their insurance benefits. It could be helping them find a way to get their appointment in a time that's convenient for them. It's helping them understand the consequences of not doing the treatment. It's helping them get out of pain. But finding a way to help people, having fun while doing it, generally leads to success. If you're in this profession just to make money and don't really focus on the care, most practices fail at doing that because most people can tell when you're looking to take advantage of them. So I really encourage you to take a look at getting back to the basics. Am I really enjoying my profession? Now, as a coach and consultant, I don't tell doctors who to hire and fire, but I do say this, and I think ladies and gentlemen that are on the line, if you've ever worked with a grumpy, frumpy, didn't want to be there person, you know what that does to a team and how much that pulls the team down. So really evaluate yourself and your coworkers and ask yourself, are the people on my team really out to help people? Do they have a passion for that? Are they really enjoying coming to work? If not, as you know, they can really hold you back. So let's break down some of the systems that really need to be in place in your practice. First and foremost, recall drives the general dental practice. If you're not getting butts in the chair, it's kind of hard to find work to do. Another system is delayed treatment. This is more important than ever before. Today, when you talk to a patient about needing work, most people are not making $700, $800, or $1,000 treatment decisions without consulting with others. So there's not really a no, but there's a not yet when they get to the counter. And so having a system in place for follow-up is another key that we'll be talking about today. Another is good, strong financial arrangements, both in-office and having outside financial options. You want to today be able to say yes to most financial arrangements, but yet you don't want to be a bank. Another system that we like to put in place is the scheduling, making sure that we have room and a plan to grow, to be productive. Most offices work on a schedule where it's more of a let's get the schedule full without truly having a goal. And so I'd like to have goals established on a daily basis, be it production or a certain amount of procedures per day, that can help you maximize the potential for your practice. Another system that's important is case presentation and dialogue. How do we talk to the patients about doing the work? And then the last system is, in order to do better, I believe the staff need to have some incentive. So I like to have a bonus system in place that's a win-win. The better the practice does, the better you do. And in doing that, it makes the staff co-owners with you, and they're motivated to do better. If there's no motivation for the team, you know, why should I work harder if there's not something in it for me? So let's talk about some things in regards to these systems. First and foremost, why do patients leave your practice? Well, a recent survey by Valmont Research said that 9% of the patients leave because of price. So you could raise your fees 10% or lower your fees 10%. 9% of the people are still going to leave your practice. 9% will move away or develop another relationship or just flat out die. 14% will cite dissatisfaction with the product. In other words, they don't like the dentistry you do. But the biggest reason patients leave, 68%, is a bad attitude or indifference of the doctor and or staff. 68%. That's 6.8 out of every 10. It costs you nothing to have a friendly, polite, courteous team, but it costs you everything if you do not. An attitude is something that can be controlled. Another feeling of lack of indifference from a doctor or staff can be translated into systems and communication or follow-up. For example, if you tell a patient that they need work and no follow-up comes from the office between now and their six-month visit, you are sending the message that you don't care. So you want to make sure that you have that system in place to let the patient know that you care. Whether they schedule or not is a different issue, but projecting how important it is that they do the work. Same thing with the foundation of a recall system. By not inviting your patients back on a regular basis, at least every 6 months, they may feel like you're too busy or just flat out don't care about them. So the first thing I do is I like to start the day off with a plan. I don't know how many of you do a huddle report. In a normal seminar, I would ask for a show of hands. But without a morning huddle, excuse me, we generally start without without a direction, if you will. And so I like to start the day off knowing where we're going to go, getting everybody on the same page. Some of the key things that we'll talk about in the morning huddle, for example, are we going to make our goal today? Did we make it the previous day? How are we scheduled for the remainder of the week? So we're looking at what are our goals for the next 5 days and how is it looking. I want the doctor and staff to know when the next productive or non-productive appointment are in the book. From a dialogue standpoint, when the doctor diagnoses, for example, a crown or a quadrant of fillings, they're able to say, you know, Mr. Smith, I'd like to see you no later than next week, knowing that you have an opening. When you say to the patient, for example, let's get you scheduled as soon as possible, depending on how much the patient values their dentistry, as soon as possible to some patients might mean tomorrow, and then your front desk doesn't have an opening for 2 weeks, so they're forced to cave in on their schedule. So I'd like the doctors to know, and the hygienist and assistants, when is your next opening so that you're scheduling into that. When can I get my next new patient in for a consult with the doctor or with the hygienist? If a new patient cannot get into your practice within 8 working days, there's a greater chance that they're going to become somebody else's patient. I typically like to bring new patients into hygiene. We can get into that if time allows. When is my next available for scaling and root planing? Again, if my hygienists are converting patients in need of perio, I'd like that patient to be able to get in within 8 days, again, having blocks in the schedule to do so, so that when that patient is motivated, we're telling the patient that it's important that we take care of them, the patient has a time in the next 8 days versus 3, 4, 5 weeks down the road, which then the patient could lose motivation. Again, a recall appointment. When is my next opening? So I know how the team can work together for helping get that full. Who can see emergencies in today's schedule? If we do not have time in today's schedule, I like to bring those patients in the half hour before lunch or the last hour of the day so that if I decide to do treatment, I'm running into lunchtime, not into other planned procedure times. A quick dialogue that I will use with an emergency patient calling in is the doctor is fully committed to other patients at this time. However, if you could be here at 11 o'clock and are willing to wait, we'll do everything we can to work you in. Now, doctors, I know your mentality is that everything for emergencies just take 10 minutes, but your staff will disagree with you. They will tell you that you always take 20 or 30. An emergency treatment in most situations or emergency appointment should be for diagnosis only. If you decide to do treatment, make sure you do have time in the schedule, and it's always best to check with your assistants or assistants or front desk in this matter. The next area is who's new to our practice today. New patients are the lifeblood of the practice. I want to know the names of the new patients, how they got here, what time they are, so we make sure we make a good first impression. I also want to ask who handed out business cards or asked for referrals from the previous day. The next area that I'm talking about is who in today's schedule, and this is where the hygienist and assistants have actually reviewed the charts, who in today's schedule still needs work so that I know my hygienist walking into the room is prepared and is discussing work that's still on their treatment plans. And then from the previous day, which patients did we present treatment on that did not schedule? And I'll use a delayed treatment form for that. And then the last thing that I discuss is any care calls, concerns, or complaints that we had from the previous day. That morning huddle is designed to get you off on the right foot, everybody pulling in the same direction, everybody's on the same page. Morning huddle should not take more than 10 to 15 minutes to accomplish. Let's break into the first system, recall. How do we know if we have enough hygiene days to accommodate our total number of patients? So what I like to do is take the total number of patients that I consider active in the practice and divide them by 6 months. I divide that by 8 patients a day on an average, and that gives me the number of hygiene days I need per month. For example, if I have a patient base of 2,400 patients, as you can see right here, divided by 6 months, I need 400 appointments. 400 appointments divided by 8 patients in a day gives me 15 hygiene days per month. So if the doctor is working an average of 16 days, he would need 3.12 hygiene days in order to accommodate that every day to just handle the 2,400 patients. A general rule is you need 4 days of hygiene per week for every 1,000 active patients. Given the fact that about 25%, will not keep their appointments on a regular basis, and you will not have what I call stand around time. Recall is all about patient retention. So a few things that I like to do to help me know that I'm retaining the patients. For those of you who still are using charts, where most offices use stickers for the year that the patient was in, and a lot of offices use it for operative or hygiene. I like to use the stickers for patients who've been in for hygiene only. As an example, I also use two different colors per year. In 08, for example, if a patient came in for a cleaning between January 1st and June 30th, they would receive a red sticker. When the patient comes back for their second cleaning of the year, the blue sticker would go over top of the red for anybody who received a cleaning between July 1st and December 31st. Now, as I've done this for at least a year, as soon as I hit January 1st of 2009, anybody who does not have a blue sticker, I know these are all overdue and missed their second cleaning of the year. As I get to July 1st of 2009, I know my patients with blue stickers are 6 to 12 months overdue, my red stickers are 12 to 18 months overdue, and I can be looking at purging, and anybody in 07 is now three recall visits behind. I like to use the larger stickers, and they don't have to be these specific colors. You just want contrasting colors, and you're changing your stickers every 6 months. Here's an example of this. If these were in my charts, as a visual, as the doctor and the patients, your front desk may say, well, we don't have anyone to call. You can take a look and see if we're now in this segment, which we just came out of, anybody who has this sticker is still overdue. These patients were just in and should be coming in for their next six-month visit. Recall scripts are really important. I like to leave nothing to chance. I want to know what my front desk is saying. So I want to make sure that I have a smile in the voice. I've got a friendly staff. And when we're calling and talking to people, I want to make sure I'm following the dialogue. So a typical dialogue in my office would be, "Good morning, Mr. Smith. This is Kelly from Dr. Schwartz's office. The reason I'm calling is Dr. Smith was reviewing your chart, and he's concerned you're overdue for your professional cleaning, oral cancer screening, and exam. He's asked me to give you a call personally if we have a few available appointments this week or next, which would be best for you. If they don't want to schedule, fine. If I don't hear from you by next week or within 2 weeks, would it be okay for me to follow up? And at what number and time is best to reach you?" Instead of just calling and saying, "Hey, I was reviewing your chart. We're worried that you're overdue for your cleaning. Would you like to schedule?" You back yourself into a quick no. Another thing from a recall is too many offices, in my opinion, give up too easy. Patients are not easy to get a hold of today. There is a challenge, but you have to look at every overdue patient is the equivalent to owing you about $150. If you take the look at the fee for a pro fee exam and x-rays, at about $150 a visit, I like to teach my staff to look at every patient that's overdue as if they owe you $150. I want you to try and find them. So the effort that I like to make is I generally will have three postcards sent out within a 90-day period. I'm going to make about 8 attempts at different times of the day, different days of the week. Generally, when I leave a message and I leave three, I wait about 10 days so that I'm not bugging them. During the 8 attempts, I will hang up without leaving a message, and then I follow up with what I call a final letter. So every patient in the practice will receive three postcards. We'll try them about 8 different times within a 90-day period. We'll leave three messages within a 90 to 120 days, and then they'll get a final letter inviting them back. This is an example of a letter that I like to use that is what I call the final letter. "During a recent review of your chart, I found that you're overdue for your professional cleaning, exam, and cancer screening. I've asked my staff to contact you regarding your appointment, but have had no luck doing so. I thought I'd try this letter in an effort to bring you up to date so you may avoid unnecessary cost and discomfort due to lack of routine care. I hope this letter finds you in good health and enjoying the fill-in-the-blank nice weather holiday or spring. Please give us a call to schedule your appointment so we can get reacquainted. I look forward to seeing you again, Dr. Schwartz." This is sent out after all my attempts and contacts have been made. Sesame, for those of you who are not using it, I love what they do in the fact that there is no labor involved once I've gathered the basic information. Most patients have pre-appointed 6 months out. You can set up Sesame automated reminders, automated voice to where 2 weeks in advance, Sesame can send them an email. Email saying, hey, this is your two-week reminder. We'll be calling you a day or two before. You can set it up to give them a two-day reminder. You can set it up to give them a voice call reminder. But I still use the personal touch of the day before I give them the call to make sure they receive the email or the reminder. So I do not lose that personal customer service that's important. My mentality of this is that if I send an email to all my patients 2 weeks in advance and just one or two people call back to reschedule and I get 2 weeks notice, I can fill that appointment and I'm saving myself hundreds of dollars in advance. But if I'm waiting till the typical 1 or 2 days in advance to confirm and only using snail mail postcards for confirmation, I don't get the same return on my investment. So using the Sesame Automated is just an excellent tool. This is also, you know, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, the patient gets something like this. They can go in, log online, they can check their appointment dates, they can sign up for receiving email reminders, print out their flex scheduling, secure payments, receive email or text. You know, in my office, for example, this is my dentist. He sent me a little 4th of July, happy 4th of July, Star Spangled Banner video. And all that is about patient retention, which again is critical. Another nice tool that they have where doctors don't typically get feedback is automatically you can send them a post-visit survey. So it gives you some feedback on how you were treated, how the patient went through the overall office experience. And you get this information back, and it can be sent to your palm or your iPhone or whatever software you're using on your computer. It gives you a little input to how you're treating patients and get the feedback that's necessary. This is an example of what the email reminder might look like. Gail, your appointment's on Thursday, July 23rd at 10 a.m. You can click to confirm your appointment. This is an example of recall cards. A lot of patients send out, or a lot of practices send out recall cards to remind patients that they're overdue. This card, when you think about an office image, is an example of what not to do. When you think about your office and the adjectives you want to use to describe your office, I'll typically hear, you know, professional, caring, friendly, family practice. Well, when I get this card, it doesn't make me think that I should be calling you for an appointment. Here's another one, you know, okay, it's cute if you're a pediatric practice, but it definitely doesn't sing quality, importance. This one is just, it looks like junk mail when you look at how much mail that the average patient gets. If they're looking at these types of what I call artsy-fartsy postcards that are straight out of the Patterson or Caldwell-Patterson or Shine magazines, these just aren't cards that make me think, boy, I better give you a call. They're a little outdated. They're kind of cheesy, in my opinion. Here, again, is sort of like for a kid, find Waldo, but this was actually sent to an adult patient, and I'm thinking, why? Here's one of my favorites that I don't like. Hey, quit horsing around. A lot of people do giggle at that, but it's not the impression I want to have of my office. I prefer to use a recall card, something like this, where we've taken a picture of the staff. This is the hygiene department, for example. And it's just superimposed onto a white background. This is not in a studio. These photos were actually taken outside. We just cut and put them onto a white background. But these are the cards that the patients will get reminding me that I'm overdue. This office, as an example, we use the office logo. It's the office sign. It's the office website. Here's another office where it's the picture of the doctor and the team. So when I get this, it's like getting a Christmas card that ties who you are to why I'm getting the card, so they're more likely to give a call back. On the cards, I like to make sure I have proper wording. I don't use the generic. So for those who have an appointment, for example, this card is to confirm your appointment on Tuesday at 3 o'clock. We've reserved this time especially for you. Not call to cancel, but please call if we can assist you in any way. And then I add on there, your referrals of friends, family, and coworkers are appreciated. Rescheduling your appointments permitted with 48 hours notice. However, less than 24 may require a deposit to reschedule. So I make sure that the wording is appropriate. The next area I'd like to talk about is delayed treatment. Not everybody's going to schedule the work you represent every time. For those of you who don't have an intraoral camera, I'd strongly suggest that you get one. The reason the intraoral camera is so powerful is that when you tell me I need treatment, I have two obstacles to overcome. One, do I believe you? And two, how am I going to pay for it? But when you can take a photo and show me that my tooth, you've cut those obstacles in half and I'm more likely to schedule. So whichever rep you have, whatever company you're with, find out about how you can finance or purchase an oral camera. If you only have one or two cameras, I'd strongly suggest that you park those in the hygiene department. Most of the work is found out of there. You can pull the camera over if you need to explain post-treatment or photos, but I generally like the hygienist to have it. Matter of fact, I require that the hygienist have a photo of the worst tooth on the screen when I walk in the room. Verbally, yes, I could describe this, but when I'm able to show this to you as my patient, there's no question that you've got a broken tooth, and this is not necessarily symptomatic. Matter of fact, I find that about 70% work diagnosed is non-symptomatic, but visual and can be preventative. So it's hard to just describe what I'm seeing, and even though I may hand them a mirror, it doesn't look the same as when I can pull it up three or four times normal. You know, a missing tooth, as an example, to show them why a missing tooth should not stay missing is very important. Sorry for the people that are talking over. When a patient doesn't schedule, what I like to do is I like to print the treatment plan for the patient who didn't schedule. And on the treatment plan, I will write why this person did not schedule. I then bring that to the morning huddle and I'll say, doctor, this patient didn't schedule for whatever reason. Then what I do is I copy the intraoral camera photo and paste it onto this form letter that just simply says, I was reviewing your chart and am concerned that your unscheduled treatment that we discussed during your last visit, I thought I'd enclose a photo from the most recent exam. I'm afraid if you do not schedule for the work recommended, this tooth may get worse, break, or even fracture. This may cost you time, money, and discomfort I'd like to help you avoid. Taking care of dental problems quickly lessens the chance of additional treatment and pain. Please contact our appointment manager, and I would use their name, so we can take care of this as soon as possible to prevent the matter from worsening. If you have any questions or concerns, please feel free to call. I hope this finds you in good health. And then I'll handwrite on the bottom of the letter, Kelly, I know money was a concern. I've authorized Susan to break it into three payments. Please give her a call. Or I know you were thinking about putting off till next year. I'm concerned that the tooth may not cooperate. But I write something in red on every letter. So based on the patient visit from the day before, I know who they were, I know that they didn't schedule, what I will then do is I will dictate to my front desk how I want them to follow up. For example, on this patient with the broken cusp, I'm going to say, let's send the letter within 3 weeks, then I want you to attempt them four or five times. On the sixth time, leave a message. So they'll make that note on the delayed treatment form, and they will follow up on that according to whatever I dictate. So every patient knows that what they were told they needed is important to me, even if they do not schedule. Follow-up is really the key. The next system I'd like to talk about is what I call financial agreements. I like to do what I call the money tree. Today's financial manager really needs to be a problem solver, not an obstacle to get by. So I offer a couple different ways to finance money in my office without me being the bank. And I joke with patients that I have an agreement with Wachovia. They're not going to do dentistry and I'm not going to lend money, but I do have payment plans to fit almost anyone's budget. So one of the best payment plans I have is that I allow 5% prepayment discount when making the appointment. So if someone makes an appointment today, they can get a 5% discount if they pay. If Bonnie asked me, Kelly, I don't have my checkbook or credit card today, but can I pay at the first appointment? I would say, yes, Bonnie, as soon as you walk in the door and make payment, I will give you the 5% discount as a courtesy. We value you as a patient. Now, I do inform Bonnie that if she does break the appointment with less than 24 hours notice, I could no longer give her that credit. The next option I have is I can break it into two. Bonnie, we could do half today and half at prep. And if Bonnie says, well, I really can't do that, can I do prep and seat? I will say, yes, I could do, for example, 400 at prep and 200 at seat. I want you to be thinking front end heavy. If two payments don't work, I have a three payment option. And what I'm trying to do here is not let's make a deal, but really try to work with the patient to allow them to do the work, especially as the work gets a little more expensive, typically over $1,000. So I can break the payment into three as an example. I could do something today, something at prep, something at seat. So if I'm dealing with $600, $200 today, $200 at prep, $200 at seat, I might do a little cash, a little check, a little credit card. If I need to, I can also break it into four. This is usually when treatment gets over out-of-pocket expense of $1,500. I'll do something today, something at prep, something at seat, and then 2 to 3 weeks later. Now, on the 3 and 4 payment options, if you will, what I'm doing there, if any patient that I feel is in good standing and been with me for a long period of time needs another payment to do the work, but allows them to do the work, I will allow them for example, if this were a prep seat and 30 days later, as long as I have a check or credit card for that out-of-office payment, not where they're going to send me the money, if I have a check or credit card, I will allow them to do that. So I'm offering different options in terms of allowing the patient to do the work. If they ask, can I make monthly payment plans, I say absolutely, as long as our care credit or one of our outside financing companies approves you. It's their decision, but we do work closely with them to help our patients. If that's not an option, we do an advanced payment plan, and once we hit a certain point, we can schedule your treatment. So I want you to think when making financial arrangements, I like to think front-end heavy, not equal payments. I like to think about getting some portion of the payment today to guarantee appointments. I do not want any financing over 90 days from the start of treatment, and all financing, I have a check or credit card guaranteeing billing. So I do not want any billing, and I do not want to think about being the bank. I use a signed financial agreement form. I do not use just the treatment plan explaining the treatment. My definition of a financial agreement is a patient needs to know two things: how much do they owe and when. This is actually a two-part form. This is the first, this is the bottom, but I've broken in two for easier to you to see on the screen. So I'll put the patient's name. So this is Bonnie Hickson. Her treatment is a crown on number 4. Estimated charge is $1,000. We estimate the insurance will pay $500. So the estimated patient portion is $500. There might be a chance that I'm going to do a build-up or something like that, so I might put that in there. Any prepayment discounts, and then balance due, and then payment as follows. Now, this second column over here is used two different ways. Perhaps I'm not sure if I'm going to do a MOD or a crown. I'll typically give them the fee for both. Sometimes I'll be talking about an implant or a bridge. I'll give them a breakdown for both. Or maybe it's going to be a buildup and a crown. Not sure till you get in there. You can use it that way. But another way my front desk will use this is if the patient is told they need a crown as an example. So I give them the estimate, and the patient says, well, I'm going to think about it. I'll get back with you. Then I'd say, Bonnie, no problem. Let me give you the fee for a buildup and a root canal just in case you wait too long. So the patients actually see the cost of doing nothing in case they wait. On the bottom, again, I like to make sure the patient's clear. Too many patients hear what they want to hear, not what my front desk has discussed. So this is very clearly spelled out. As a courtesy, we do accept assignment of benefits from most insurance companies. However, all other estimate balances are due as agreed upon above. This is an estimate. Again, big and bold, so the patient doesn't say, well, you told me. Based on limited information provided by your insurance company, the level of assistance purchased for you by your employer determines the amount of your insurance company's payment. Please remember, dental insurance is your responsibility. We're always happy to help you with submitting your claim, but make no guarantee of your insurance assistance or payment. Unpaid balances over 30 days will be due immediately or considered delinquent account handled by a collection manager. Key phrases right here. If treatment's not started within 60 days, all terms and fees are subject to change. Big one. Feel free to contact your insurance carrier for more specific estimate. I put a lot of the responsibility back to the patient so they don't say, well, you said this. Treatment involving lab-related work must be completed within 3 or 4 weeks or remake charge may be added. This is in the event that someone starts but doesn't finish. If you receive treatment by another dentist or specialist, it may change your estimated benefit. And again, cancellations less than 24 hours may require a deposit to reappoint. And then I have the patient sign. I give them a copy. I use non-carbon paper, and then I keep the original. Fraud, I'm not going to touch on today, but just kind of a humorous thing. Had an office where they did not have very good controls. The office was, a person in the office was committing a little fraud, set the office on fire. Make sure you have systems in place, backups, things signed, your T's are crossed and your I's are dotted, and make sure you have controls because anything is possible. Another thing that's important today in staying with the times is keeping up appearances. Some doctors got in the mentality that they were going to quit or retire. Why reinvest in the practice? Well, the practice gives an image to the quality of work that you do. So I like to make sure that the practice is clean, neat, and free from clutter. So give you an example, what does your office say about you? This was an office I took a look at. I was standing in the office with the doctor. He left me alone. I took a picture with the iPhone, and there was no way I was going to work with this guy just based on this. But yet you can see this door here. When this door is open and patients are walking by, what does that say? And I know many of you ladies are probably laughing right now because your doctor has an office that looks just like this. But if you keep the door shut, it's fine. But for the most part, you do want to make sure that you're presenting an image. First impressions are important. This is a nice tiled wall. These are actually coat hangers built in, a little water fountain there. This is a pediatric practice. They put in a kiddie door. Cost them about $200. But kids love going there. It's like going to the Pied Piper. They'll stand in line to wait their turn to walk through. But it just makes them feel special, and it's something a little different. Again, a reception area that doesn't look like a dental office. It's more like a living room. It's warm and inviting. This is a very high-tech office that I work with. The doctor keeps one of three different motorcycles out there. He actually writes it off as artwork for tax purposes. But people walking by this general lobby in the office building come over to look at the bike, realize that it's a dental office, and they get a wow feeling, and they think, wow, this doctor must really be good. So the appearance brings patients into the practice. And this is not for everybody. You don't have to be this extreme, but it is an example of what you can do. Having a nice refreshment center or something to make the patients feel welcome when they come in the door. Again, just some examples of free from clutter, looking nice, a little sofa, some chairs, nothing on the counters that, you know, is cluttered. Again, all clear. This is a walkout station. One of the biggest problems is a sense of privacy. We were limited on space in this particular office, so we just put in a little checkout station where we have two private areas where they can sit down. There's a little wall as a divider. Gives the patients a sense of privacy, but yet I can walk out two patients at the same time in close proximity, and they feel like they're comfortable because they've dealt with this scenario at a bank or perhaps a hospital. Again, your treatment rooms, you want them free from clutter. You don't want crap all over the counters. It says a little bit about the office and the type of work that you do. And so I'm just giving you some examples. Here's one where they have a nice TV in the reception area. We've got a coffee, refrigerator stocked with waters and some juices and so forth. Again, the operatory clean. We've got the monitors for the patients to see so that they can be involved in their treatment. Again, just the flow, being able to walk patients out. We've got two walkout stations, reception areas that are warm and welcome versus full of clutter, just point of sale. One thing that you probably maybe have not picked up but maybe see in these photos is that I'm not a fan of things like table tents, cardboard signs, and brochures cluttering the office. They're really just they're just clutter, and patients don't generally use them anything other than to scribble on or to put their gum in. I like to use my brochures back behind the front desk. We give them out in the operatories or down the hall if we talked about something specific. I'll have little things out from here and there that are appropriate, but generally not in my reception area. Again, the office is just free from clutter, looking nice, everything in its place, making the patients feel welcome and warm. Another big thing that attracts patients is your sign. This is an example of what not to do. You have this sign here. It's too far off the road, but what you may notice is that with the brown and gold, it blends into the background. So cars driving down the road, there's no way they can see it. They actually have trees blocking their sign, so it really has no use. The browns with the whites, again, blend into most geographical backgrounds with the dirt, the grass, and everything else. A sign really is meant to stand out. For example, this is a perfect where you have the blue and white, white block letters, bigger. I'm not a fan of the extracted tooth here, but the sign and the block letter is ideal for what patients need driving by. They see that it's a dentist, they can get the number or the website. Another area that I like to talk about is quickly scheduling for success. I like to have a goal for the practice. So in setting up my daily goals, for example, if we have 5,000 a day, looking at my, this is from Dentrix, if looking at my day and my goal is 5,000 a day, looking at this, I don't need anything here because these days are greater than 5,000. I'm really looking at the end of the month before I need to schedule any productive. But my goal is to be productive, not full. Productive, not necessarily busy, although I do enjoy having in the office do both. But having a determined goal for the practice is important. This right here, at the end of a visit as an example, they get the post-op survey. So I can send out that survey that I mentioned earlier, and this is what it comes to you looking like. One of the next systems I'd like to talk about is case presentation. It's really important in today's factors to being successful, if you will, is how do you talk about work? Today, the patient has priorities. When you look at dentistry, it's not typically a tangible product, not something they can touch, show off, and feel. So when the patient works within a budget and they have a little bit of money left over at the end of the month and they've saved up maybe $1,000, they definitely don't want to spend it in your office. They want to spend it on a trip, a vacation, or something else. And a lot of people are getting a little more frugal and they're saving their money in case of job loss and so forth. But how do we change the priorities? Well, Stanford University did a business study about why people come back. One of the first things is class and style. That's the appearance of the office and the staff. Another is product knowledge or professionalism. How does my staff or I handle situations? One of the most unprofessional answers would be, I don't know, I don't care, or it's not my job. So if a patient asks you, for example, how much is my insurance going to cover, my staff are dialogued to say, based on the limited information, we can give you an estimate. Or if I'm an assistant or hygienist where I don't like to talk money and procedures in the same room, the hygienist might say, Mr. Smith, I can introduce you to Sally. She's our financial expert. I know we have payment plans to fit almost anyone's budget. Doctor, the most common question you're going to be asked is how long can I wait, especially today? So when I look in the patient's mouth, or if you're looking in the patient's mouth, the dialogue I like to use is, if it were my mouth, I would wait no longer than. And again, that goes back to my morning huddle. If I know I'm booked 2 weeks out, if it were my mouth, I wouldn't wait any longer than 2 weeks. Definitely no more than three. Anything longer than that, you have a greater chance of the tooth breaking, fracturing, or getting worse. And so by giving a very definitive versus I don't know, one of the things I don't like to hear is maybe this week, maybe next month, maybe next year, I'm not sure. Well, most patients will hear they get to wait. Having fun in an office, introducing what I call the friendship factor, is a big role. If your staff are not friendly, polite, and courteous, if you're not engaged in showing interest in what the patient's interested in, they feel like they don't have a rapport or trust with you. And without trust, we don't get case acceptance. Empathy is something that you cannot teach, but according to Stanford University, if you're not projecting that you care, the patient picks up on that and they have no reason to come back. And it goes back to what I said earlier, that if your staff and you are not having fun, if you're not truly there to help people, it's really going to be hard to convert that patient to appointments. But the biggest area that moves forward with the patients is enthusiasm or a belief in what you do, a confidence, a sense of pride in what you do. I use two different personality types to really explain and ask which one are you. And I use the cartoon character Winnie the Pooh. Are you a Tigger or are you an Eeyore? You know, when a doctor walks in the room to a patient and says, well, boy, I hate to tell you you need a crown, or I really hate to tell you you need perio treatment, the patient's going to kind of tune into that. But if I come in and I'm very upbeat and positive and I say, you know, Bonnie, I see that you have a large filling here. It covers more than half the tooth. I hate to tell you that you need a crown, but what I hate even more than that is if this tooth breaks or fractures, gets worse, and I can't save it, it costs you more money. So the good news is, we've caught it before it got worse. The good news is my team and I can take care of you. Let's get you scheduled the next couple weeks. I have to be very positive about what I'm doing, not apologetic for what the situation in their mouth is. So if you want to change your priorities, take a look at the office staff and the appearance. I like to have everybody on the same page wearing the same uniform. I like them to be knowledgeable and I spend time in training them. I want them to be finding out things about the patient. We do a little thing called getting the form, which stands for family, occupation, recreation, and what motivates the patient. And that is filled out on every patient as I get to know them better. I have a staff that's caring, and definitely we all try to stay enthusiastic. We do a little thing called the Total Care Interview, or TCI, and the purpose of that is to deliver a clear, concise, distinct, precise message to my patients each and every time. I want the staff educating the patient so the patient leaves with a clear and accurate understanding of their comprehensive dental needs. And staff involvement is the key. I want the staff to bring the patient's needs and wants to you with all their problems and concerns eliminated. More people will spend money on things they want versus what they need. And typically in a dental office, you're telling patients what they need all day long. More patients will move forward based on your relationship versus your knowledge. And when you look at relationships in general, relationships build trust. And so who generally has better relationships with the patient? Your staff. Most of your staff are generally women, particularly the hygiene, although there are a great deal of men. If there are any men in the crowd, I apologize. But generally speaking, the relationship's going to have a bigger influencing factor. If you take a look at how many times the patient turns to your hygienist and says, do I really need that? Or check with the front desk that's been there for 15 years. They're making their decision based on the relationship they have with the individual, not the knowledge that you possess as a dentist. And when you look at relationships, who are typically better at building relationships, men or women? Women. Who are typically better at nurturing? Women. Who are better at multitasking? Women. Attention to detail? Women. So guys, why do we even let you talk? The women dentists out there that I work with typically have a higher case acceptance rate because they pay more attention to the relationship and building that relationship, nurturing that relationship, which builds trust. The average patient doesn't know the difference between a good crown and a bad. They just know how they were treated. They'll walk out and say, wow, that office treated me great, but they generally won't walk out and say, wow, that was a great crown prep. So one of the first things, if I'm going to have your staff involved in what I call co-diagnosing or helping you present treatment, is we need to define what teeth needing treatment are. So take the time to go through with your staff and explain why missing teeth shouldn't stay missing. Show them some photographs so that your hygienist or assistants can talk to patients on why you don't want to leave that way. What's your definition of a cracked, broken, or fractured tooth so that when it's this bad, this is when you're probably going to present treatment? What's your definition of a large filling before you'll be talking about placing a crown? Why will you do crowns on root canals? How long do you wait? What is the procedure, signs and symptoms, so your staff can help identify needs? What will you do cosmetically? This is a patient before, this is the same patient after. Not that this person had a bad smile, but in listening to this patient, she was looking to do a TV weather person interview and to make her smile better on camera. Even though it was a very low-paying job, she did make the investment, and after the smile, she did get the job. Failing crowns or restorations, you know, what are you looking for so that your staff can help point them out that they don't look good or they're not functioning well so they can be replaced? And again, with the intraoral camera, you can use these photos to describe to the patient why you don't want to leave this tooth in this particular condition. This tooth here is what I call the million-dollar shot. Missing tooth are typically non-symptomatic, but yet the patient doesn't understand this could happen if we do nothing. So when I show them a missing tooth and they're thinking of waiting, and then you show them this tooth, they're really ready to go. So making sure you're on the same page, make sure your staff understand what you're looking for with missing teeth, cracked, fractured, broken, large fillings, root canals, cosmetic, old or failing crowns, and function. So the five elements of the total care interview. Understand people change for only one of two reasons. They either have to or want to, but unless they have the bad enough factor, they're not going to move. They either have to bad enough or want to bad enough, or it's just not going to happen. And pain is that motivation. The having to is a physical pain. The wanting to is an emotional pain. And if you learn to listen and communicate, you can help use that to motivate. So the five steps of the total care interview is, first is an introduction. The whole purpose of this is to make the patient feel at ease. So when the patient comes back, I'll say, good morning, Logan. How are you today? How's your family doing? How's Kylie? How was your recent trip to Florida? I just want to take the time to listen and build a little bit of rapport with the patient. The second step is the general question, and I want to make sure I'm asking questions, not making statements. I don't want to ask, you're not having any pain like hot, cold, sweets, or pressure, are you? Which is really a statement. Instead, I want to ask each of those questions individually. Are you having any sensitivity to hot? How about cold, sweets, pressure? Each question, I'm stopping and waiting for a response. If I get a yes, I'll go to the third step, which is to focus or magnify. What type of pain is it? Is it a shooting pain? Is it throbbing pain? How long does it last? On a 1 to 10 scale, how intense is it? What I'm doing here is helping two things. One, I'm helping your hygienist or assistant identify what the concerns are so that you can diagnose. And the other is I'm helping the patient understand that by asking these questions, these are things that I'd like to avoid. If I get a yes to one of these questions, and I get an idea that it's a shooting pain or a throbbing pain on a 1 to 10 scale, it's a 7, then I need to ask what I call the if question. If we could, I know this might sound silly, but if we can prevent it from breaking, fracturing, getting worse, would you like us to do something about it? If so, then I'm going to solve the problem. It looks like it's going to need a filling, a crown, or root canal, but let's ask the doctor, he or she are the expert. When you come back in, there's the other side, I'm sorry, before you come in, the other side is the cosmetic side. I want to talk about the wants. A lot of people want whiter teeth. More and more offices are doing more and more whitening. People are very aware of it on TV. To avoid having a taking the chance of offending the patient, how I like to lead into cosmetics is I'll ask, have we ever taken a shade on you before, Bonnie? Bonnie will say no. Well, let me show you what a shade guide is. A lot of people are asking us how they can get whiter teeth. Here's where you are. Here's where you could be. Does that interest you? If she says yes, I'll go on to explain. If she says no, I may ask, do you have any tooth color fillings that you don't like the looks of? Do you have any teeth that are turned or crooked you don't like the looks of? Do you have any spaces between your teeth? All these things, I'm not sure if you're aware, but all these things are situations that our doctor can fix. You may or may not know that our doctor is one of the best cosmetic dentists around. So when you come into the room, I'm giving you the bullets as the hygienist. Doctor, this is Bonnie. Bonnie's having sensitivity to hot on the lower left-hand side. On a 1 to 10 scale, she said it was a 7. It's been keeping her up at night. I've taken a picture with the intraoral camera. She agrees that the filling covers more than half the tooth. Doctor, I've shared with Bonnie that it probably is going to need a crown, but we wanted to check with you. If we could fix this, Bonnie is interested. So I'm giving those bullets to you like a paramedic would to a doctor pulling into the hospital. The last system I want to talk about real quick is sharing the profit. The better you do, the better the staff does. I like to do a little thing at the morning huddle where we have a goal for the day. Let's say it's $6,000. We have $500 in poker chips. There's 100 of each denomination. And each staff member gets to pull out a poker chip if we hit our goal for the day. So if they pull out a 1, a 5, a 10, and a 20, they split $36 between the staff. That's their bonus for that particular day. But what that really leads to is if every day we hit our goal, our production and collection goes up. So in sharing the profit with the team, I do what I call a bonus sharing or profit sharing. I'll take my most current 3 months production, for example, January, February, and March. I'll multiply that by a salary percentage that we agree upon with you and your accountant. And that's what I call available dollars. I subtract the same 3 months gross staff salaries and anything left over is the staff. So for example, if I had 3 months at $100,000, I had $300,000 times 20%. There's $60,000 available. That's what I should pay the staff. If I actually paid them $62,000, I don't bonus. But if I actually paid them $58,000, I owe them $2,000. The $2,000 is split up by the team. So where do I get started? Sesame does some great things. They're a very powerful tool that can help you get your finger on tips. They do great webinars. They have some coming up. Bonnie can talk to you about them or you can go online. You know, patients' mindsets are already shifting. They're going to more technology. They're going more to online referencing, text messages, and emails. So definitely take a look at some of the things that Sesame can do for you. Do you have to? Do you want to make some changes? If you do, by all means, you know, first thing I would do is define what success is, make a plan, and if you need some help, feel free to give me a call. So my name is Kelly Schwartz with Schwartz Consulting Group. You can email me questions, call me directly. I'm going to stay on the line here with Bonnie and take any questions that you may have. So thank you very much, and Bonnie, thank you for making me part of your webinar series.